It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, sponsored exclusively by the law firm Kendorian Murad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with our buddies, their team, today at kmlawyers.com. And be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We will get into the Nats getting their first win of the season yesterday. They are on to Toronto to take on the Blue Jays tonight, looking to even their record at 2-2. Also, a lot of news coming out of the owners' meetings. That's doing some heavy lifting for us on Grant and Danny today. We'll get into what Bengals coach Zach Taylor said about Trey Hendrickson, the defensive end Washington's been sniffing around on, possibly still being available. That's coming up at 3:25. But right now, on the Rude guest hotline, we find our guy Tony Massenburg. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Tony, of course, covers the Wiz over at Monumental Sports. I was actually altcasting with him watching the game on Saturday night. We were talking a bunch about the Terps. He's a Maryland legend, and he's got some thoughts on the program. Tony, it's good to have you back on with Grant and Danny here. How are you?
I'm good, good, man. Good seeing you then, and good hearing from you now, bro.
So, Tony, just give me your 30,000-foot view here. What did you make of this whole situation, the season, the way it ended, Kevin Willard leaving, and the kind of fallout?
Well, I thought the season was fantastic. I thought that we had a great unit, great group of guys. And, you know, I the only weakness I really saw that we had that I was worried about as the season progressed was just a lack of depth. But, you know, I soon started to realize that the starters were really good, exceptional. Derek Queen was, you know, exceptional and as good as, you know, better than advertised, I think, in most people's estimation, because he's, you know, he's really worked himself into being one of the top draft picks in the NBA, I believe, with what he was able to show. So, and I thought that notoriety he gained as freshman of the year really brought some great attention to the program. Now, that all being said, that speaks great for the team and the players on the team. And obviously, you know, they had a pretty good season. As far as Coach Willard leaving, I think that's just when you look at it, you know, the biggest thing there to me is just a byproduct of the business. This is where it is. Players come and go. And now that, you know, with the transfer portal, and now that's trickled down to coaching. You know, I'm sorry to see a successful coach leave and, you know, the coach and a team that, you know, got to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2016, you know, with that core group of players and coaches. And now that's all going to be broken up. And, you know, this is just a change that happens in a lot of programs. I didn't care for the way some things came out, you know, as far as, you know, some of the other situations, the way things were happening with between him and the athletic department. I thought those things should have been handled in-house and, you know, just wasn't a good look for the program. But as far as him leaving, you know, when you look at the way business is conducted now at the college level, this is really kind of par for the course.
Tony, you were there late 80s, right? 1990 NBA draft. You've seen all the different iterations of this thing all the way through as an NBA player, watching them win a national championship. I know from talking to you yesterday, you're still very close with a lot of the guys that have been through the program and were on that team. I want to know, what do you think they should be? Like, how should they be viewing themselves? What should their look in the mirror reflect as a basketball program and their standing in the country?
Well, I think it should reflect what put us on the map in the beginning, and that was the, you know, the fact that we won games. We were a very successful program in the 80s, and you know, again, that goes back to Lefty Gizell and the tradition that he helped establish with Maryland basketball. You know, even you can go back as far as the Gary Williams days. You know, there's been a level of excellence, and I'm talking about Gary Williams as a player, not as a coach. We know what Gary was able to accomplish as a coach, but I'm talking about as far as the tradition of Maryland basketball. It's been consistent throughout decades. And you know, I think once we kind of got to a place where, you know, after the death of Len Bias, we had three coaches in 5 years, and I played for all three of them. And so the change, you know, at the University of Maryland really kind of started there. And once Coach Gary Williams got there, the third coach of the three, between Lefty Gizell, Bob Wade, and then eventually Gary, then Gary was able to unite the program in a way that really nobody outside of the program could have, because he was one of the University of Maryland's own, and he was an up-and-coming coach in the college ranks and had proven that he was, you know, exceptional as a coach. So when the opportunity arose for him to be able to come back to the program at a time when the program really needed it and was, you know, coming out of, you know, dealing with some NCAA things and obviously still reeling from the controversial, you know, situation, the way the Len Bias situation played out. So, you know, that was a ripple effect of years. And then you have Bob Wade come in and you know, there was more turmoil with his departure. So Gary was viewed as that guy, as one of Maryland's own, who could really bring it all back together. And when I look at the program now, not that it's in that type of turmoil in comparison to the past, but it is in a place where we are feeling like we need someone who is actually a part of the program to truly be the one to sort of galvanize the alumni and the fans and get back to the historical aspect of, you know, Maryland guys being part of it. That was the one thing. You know, there were some Maryland players on that staff that Coach Williams won the championship with. And myself and Walt Williams and other guys were very involved with that team and the program in general for all the years that we played. So I think we need to really find a way to be a Maryland family again, because I think we got away from that once Gary retired.
Tony Massenburg with us here on G&D. And Tony, this is kind of where I was going. You mentioned this. This is the landscape now. For better or worse, you could complain about it, but I'm not saying you, but anyone could be mad about it, but that's what it is. And when you hire somebody that's going to do probably something similar to what Kevin Willard did, like where you could either hold the university, for lack of a better term, hostage, or he might sign a better deal elsewhere. You're kind of part of that system now. To me, that moonshot is to find this 2.0 version of a Gary Williams, right? Someone that's not just going to leave because the next program comes calling with maybe a bit more money or whatever, that's got the affinity for the place and wants to make it work there. I just don't know where that's going to come from. Is that something you co-sign? And it sounds like you were talking about that, sort of bringing that Maryland family aspect back together.
Yeah, that's where it needs to come from, because when you look at some of the other top programs in the country, across the country, that's what they have. The Carolinas, you know, they had, you know, Carolina guys, you know, you can go to a bunch of traditional schools, Duke and so forth, and you can see it's people who have ascended to being a head coach or athletic director, whatever it is, but it's people who have ascended from within the program, who started there and have some type of personal connection, because sometimes to really have that type of loyalty and to draw others in and to really kind of have that other factor that's outside of you know, the brand of the school, you need that family atmosphere. And the only way a lot of times to create a family atmosphere is to hire people from within the university family. So I think we have to find a way to get back to that.
So who are those guys
out there?
Like, I know Dwayne Simpkins at American, but he's the one name I keep hearing. But are there other Maryland alums that are coaches? I mean, it's a small pool, right?
Well, yeah, it's a small pool, but there are guys that have, you know, have been assistant, that are assistant coaches. There's a Dwayne Simpkins who I think would be great when you consider the fact that, you know, his second year as a head coach, he wins his conference. I think that says a lot about him. And he was a longtime assistant coach as well. And he's also a guy who's, you know, well known in this area, you know, and has a great name, family guy, great reputation, and a guy that all the University of Maryland players and alumni respect, because he is someone who deserves to be respected. He would be someone that I think should be considered, mainly because he has everything that I just illustrated about the same qualities that Gary had. Gary had more head coaching experience, I think, at the time because he had been there longer. But I think that in this age where things have shifted, where, you know, coaches and players tend to move, you know, sometimes from year to year or every couple of years, then I think you could look at someone like him and make a case, you know, that he could be a great higher here, especially with his local ties and just the fact that he's had success during his brief head coaching career, which says that he seems to be prepared. I have seen other people get opportunities with less of a connection than Dwayne Simpkins has to Maryland and less of a resume from a coaching standpoint than what he has. So I just don't believe that it's out of the question that he should be someone who should be considered.
So as we go forward here in terms of the search and what's next, the timing of it's terrible, Tony, right? This is so late in the game. And I know it's terrible. They're not the only school to have this happen to them. Other teams that are successful probably aren't dealing with this. So is there a short-term version of a fix or kind of what should they do here? Like right now, this minute, if they're meeting over there in Maryland, whoever they is, I don't know who the AD is going to be. Like what should be happening right now?
Well, you know, first of all, the timing is awful. And the AD leaving just complicates the situation even more, because normally the AD would be, you know, the person who would obviously be instrumental in picking the head coach. But, you know, when you have vacancies at both those positions, I think it's even more important that you take time that's, you know, obviously you don't have a lot of, but you have to allocate some of that toward finding the right people. And I don't think that's a process in itself that can be rushed. I think you'd be better invested. I think you'd be better off investing time in the front end of trying to have a search to where you can find the most qualified person, so that you, in other words, when you make that move, make sure you make the right move, instead of, you know, saying, well, we'll just hire this person and we're not sure if, you know, this is going who we're going with long term or whatever. I just think it's important that you invest the time wisely, because you're not going to have a lot of time on the back end once you start talking about, you know, the season will be here before you know it. There's, you know, football season. You're obviously going to need your AD there. So I just think you have to invest that time in your search and make sure you hire the right two people in the AD and the head coach. And hopefully that, you know, you can make things happen pretty quickly on the back end with some assistance from other people that are already in place.
Tony, Saturday was fun. So was this. Thanks, buddy. Good catching up.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you got it. So did the Altcast last minute filling in. Had only done Caps, did a Wizards Altcast.
That's cool, dude.
But it was him and Chris Wright, the former Georgetown star.
Absolutely.
He was a great player at Georgetown.
People sleep, man.
He used to get buckets at St. John's College High School, too. But I mean, he was a walking bucket. That kid could score.
He could if he was a couple inches taller,
Yes,
like
exactly
one of those
right.
like type guys, yeah. He was a player, man.
But those two, just really, really fun to work with. And it was actually a great Wizards game. It was two bad teams, them and the Brooklyn Nets, and it came down to the wire. And they had a couple of career nights from a couple of the guys deep down the roster. And it was entertaining to
watch.
Kind
of what happens this time of year, right?
Yeah, sitting and hanging out with those guys watching basketball was really insightful. So I really enjoyed catching up with him. Maryland fans obviously annoyed by what's going on with Kevin Willard.
Should
There's
be.
No doubt
yeah.
about that. I think there are two things that could possibly be annoying Nats fans right now. They got their first win of the season on Sunday. They lose 2 of 3 to the Phillies, but they avoid the sweep. There was a lot to like in that series, by the way. Their starting rotation was great. Mackenzie Gore in game 1, 6 shutout, 13 strikeouts, no walks, 1 hit. Jake Irvin in game 2 was solid, 5 innings, 2 runs. And then in game 3, Mitchell Parker pitched into the 7th and was fantastic. 6 1/3 innings of scoreless baseball for him with 5 strikeouts. Can't do any better than 17 1/3 2-run innings. Number 2 ERA in the sport out of 30 teams this deep into the season in terms of rotation ERA. Other things that went well. Nathaniel Lowe homered 2 times. Back-to-back games 2 and 3.
K-Bear Ruiz yeah.
is in line to have a better year than last year. We heard from everybody down at spring training. He's homered in games 1 and 2 of the season. He got off to a fast start. Josh Bell, who's got just 1 hit on the year, hit a big 3-run home run to get off the schneid. They hit for more power. This is a team that hit 135 home runs last year. They've already got 6 home runs through a couple of games, which is, you know, really, really exciting. But I tell you that, Danny,
yeah.
to then also tell you, their bullpen is going to be a problem. And I don't think it's as bad as it looked in the first 2 games, but I don't know how much better it is either.
Yeah, let's say it's 50% better. Still awful.
They gave up 16 runs yeah. in the first 2 games. In fact, the Nats have allowed 19 runs through 3 games, 17 from the bullpen, basically all of that in what was 2 dreadful performances that completely blew chances to win on opening day and in their second game. They probably could have and should have won both games. Not with a bullpen walking the yard and giving up big flies.
No, and you added a couple other things. You're kind of, you know, making up that Michael Scott cringe gif to start the year. You know, Dylan Cruz doesn't look great at the plate with 8 strikeouts and his 0 for 11 start. Those are small sample things.
That's number 2 on the list of things that probably drew the ire.
But yeah, so, you know, and a couple guys are off to sluggish starts. But through 3 games, these are things you don't notice if it's June. I mean, you'd probably notice 8 strikeouts and 11 at-bats in June. You'd go, well, that's not a great stretch. But that's all it is so far is a great stretch. Now, if we're doing this in a week from now, 2 weeks from now, we can have another conversation. But yeah, the bullpen, to me, it's a, there's nobody that, when that phone rings right now, other than Kyle Finnegan, who was shaky on opening day in typical early season Kyle Finnegan fashion, who has a track record at this stage, right? I mean, there's not a good answer down there at this point, which is, you know, for a team, again, in their internal message that they turned around and showed us all, this is what we're saying to each other. This is our organizational culture. This is our mantra. This is what we want you guys to know about us. It's not development time. It's winning time. Oh, man. Like, that can really put a damper on some things where you've got some leads, you've got competitive games, you've got great starts from your starting pitching, you're scrapping and clawing on an opening day or whatever, and you just got the kerosene boys trotting in for the bullpen.
Well, you can't be a playoff team with a bad bullpen. It just doesn't work. And you can't win very often if your bullpen's terrible. And theirs has been through a series. I don't think they think it's this bad, but my question, rhetorically or otherwise, would be, what am I missing exactly? Finnegan, they decided they may not keep. Like, they let him walk. They basically said, we don't need you anymore at the amount we're supposed to pay you. And he was a free agent for months. At any moment, he could have signed with any other team. They were willing to move on. Eventually, it just so happened that he was worth enough in other teams' eyes that the Nats said, if you're not going to make any money, we'll pay you that money.
We could not pay you, too.
But he's the best they got, the guy that they said no thank you to. Yeah. At the start of the offseason.
And now, I still like Ferrer. I think he'll end up turning in a good year. I think there's plenty there.
But this is the point. So Finnegan is the best that they've got in terms of proven commodities. He'll pitch the 9th inning right now. He was very good yesterday. He is okay. He is aggressively solid, I would say. Jose Ferrer is the one guy in this bullpen with tremendous stuff. The power lefty, you can touch 100. He's not off to an awesome start. He needs to throw the ball over the plate. But I do believe very much so in Jose Ferrer. Otherwise, you're hoping that Brad Lord, who debuted yesterday and didn't get a batter out, ends up becoming a real nice piece for you, throwing 97 out of the bullpen. You're hoping that 27-year-old Orlando Ribalta, who looks the part, a former 12th-round pick, can become an important member of the bullpen. Like, Colin Poche is a last guy in for me. He's pitched twice in big spots and just given up a million runs. Lucas Sims didn't have a good season last year.
No.
Gave him $3 million, brought him in. Jorge Lopez got booted off of a team last year. He's been on three teams since the start of last season. What am I missing here? I know that Derek Law is hurt, and when he comes back, at least he can give you some innings. Maybe Zach Brixey, similarly, is somebody with a strained quad that could help them, but again, he's completely unproven. Hasn't pitched very well at the major league level when he's been given a shot. It's not like they have dudes in their bullpen that have long track records of success. That's my point.
Yeah, there it is. That's your summary.
You have to spend money to upgrade your bullpen. They did not do that.
Yeah, and that's one of those places where you can have a pretty good economic return on investment, if you will, right? The starting pitcher, who's a frontliner, is going to make, I'm making up a number, $25-30 million a year. If you can't spend that, you could spend 5.5 or 6 instead of spending 3 to get a more proven commodity. And historically, one of the areas where Rizzo and company, they haven't overspent on bullpens because, and I understand this, by the way, just as a general pathology, you don't want to go, I don't want to pay for the guy coming off the career year where he made 75 appearances, probably got up another 25 times, and he was Old Faithful, so the manager ran him into the ground. Bullpens tend to fluctuate. Bullpen arms tend to fluctuate. You look at the list of closers right now versus 3 years ago, it's almost an 80-some percent turnover for almost everybody around baseball.
It's a volatile game.
And it's so volatile, right? So you don't want to pay too much of a premium, but that's the spot where maybe you could have. If again, the rhetoric is, we are trying to win right now, that's an effective, cheap way to improve the roster, right, in terms of money spent. You can't have everybody making $40 million a year. Even the Yankees can't do it. Even the Dodgers can't do it, right? You've got to have some nice, cost-cutting spots. This is one of those places where I go, God, I wish it wasn't Colin Poche, with all due respect to him. You know what I mean? Like, you could have upgraded a couple spots here for a few million more bucks and been serviceable. I'm not talking about having a lights-out bullpen, not the bullpen de la muerte that the Braves had a handful of years ago,
well,
where everybody coming out was
here's
nasty.
Here's the bottom line. There's not a bullpen in the sport that's going to the playoffs that doesn't have a reliever in it that's making good money. You're just not going to find it. You know, Finnegan, again, is the high watermark, who they said, you're not worth $9 million, mm-hmm. and they brought back at $6
Right.
Otherwise, it's kind of dudes that were available on the scrap heap or young guys they're projecting some success from. And I like Lord and I love Ferrer in these roles. But you need 7-8 guys that are going to be pretty consistent to have a good bullpen. I just don't know where it's going to come from. The Nationals now 1-2 to start their season. You want to weigh in on that? You can go to our poll of the day to give us your thoughts, and we will tell you what it is in just a couple of moments. Our Grant and Danny poll of the day is presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage. Local, long distance, residential, or commercial. 3 decades of best-in-class service and experience. Every coach meets with the media at the owners' meetings. They have a breakfast. So everyone sits down at these round tables. There's 16 coaches in each conference. They're all at different tables, and everyone walks around and talks to them. Bengals coach Zach Taylor today was asked about Trey Hendrickson being available for teams like Washington. We'll tell you what he said next on G&D.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Update. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. We're with you until 6:30 this evening. Nats baseball tonight. They are in Toronto to take on the Blue Jays. Michael Soroka will make his first start as a National, a Canadian right-hander pitching north of the border.
How about that? That is a good deal. He's kind of the tipping point guy in this rotation, I would say. Like if he works out, could either be here. Or it could be somebody they could bring back a nice haul for a competitor.
Head coach of the Bengals, Zach Taylor, is one of the AFC coaches who met with the media today at the coaching breakfast at the league meetings. The owners' meetings are taking place in Florida. So let's play a clip. It's a little hard to hear this, I will say. But bear with it. It's about 20 seconds. I think you can kind of make out what he's saying. It's just not awesome audio, but we couldn't find a better version of it. But this was him when he was talking about Trey Hendrickson as a Bengal and the fact that they want to keep him around. This is Zach Taylor.
Very consistent. You know, not just 2 years, 4 years for us. And I think he's one of the premier pass rushers in this league. Teams have to devote a lot of attention to him, you know, as they start their game plan each week. You know, he's been a guy who works his tail off day in and day out, 365 days a year, which I can expect and appreciate. And so again, we'll just continue to work through the process.
So there's a reason I thought it was worth just grinning and bearing it through that. When you're in a negotiation with somebody, to heap that kind of praise, to me, is something that you know the agent's going to find out. Like, they're scouring over all the quotes. They're using everything against you. Here's what he said there. He said he's one of the harder-working guys in the building. He corrected the question when someone said he's been amazing for you guys for 2 years because he has 17 and a half sacks two straight years. Actually, it's 4 years. 4 years ago, he had 14 sacks. Uh-huh. Said he's one of the best pass rushers in the league. I mean, went through how complete a player he is, acknowledged that that offensive coordinators are basically game planning for him.
Mm-hmm.
You're just doing the agent's job at that point. A lot of times, coaches aren't playing that game. Now, I guess it could go one of two ways. Maybe they think he's leaving and it almost is like they're building up the profile because they're trading him. Because, again, if you're negotiating, you're not saying all those positive things for the agent to then use against you normally. So you could say this is evidence that maybe they are still thinking about trading him. Or the flip side is he just wasn't thinking about that element of it, the business part of it, and he's just complimenting one of his guys.
It's also not a secret, right? Like, you can't pretend that he's not good.
No, but there's a difference between Dan Orlovsky saying it and the head coach of the team. When you're negotiating and you're going, we want 35, and the Bengals are going, dude, we can't. We got to give you 31. And he's like, you just said this. This is what Zach Taylor said this week. Offensive coordinators have to plan against him. He's been great for 4 years, not two. that will come back in this negotiation.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, he was going to command a bunch before, and he'll command a bunch after this. But I see your point. If it's an organizational stance, right, where you would say, we all know that he's good. He knows that he's good. That's where we're doing business. But no need to be overzealous about it. So maybe there is something to that. Maybe there is kind of the second order effect. Maybe there is some three-dimensional chess going on here that they may still plan on moving him. But the point is, at the end of the day, it sounded to me like a coach that knows, man, oh man, I don't have much on that side of the ball, and that guy's great. Like, that's my linchpin. That's my star. That's the dude that we need, and I really love to have him back. So maybe he was probably kind of gave away the business there that he was overly complimentary.
Yeah, I know that he suggested they're working through the process, and he said that another time as well during this press conference where he was asked about like where the negotiations were, and he wouldn't really give much. But the Bengals reportedly think they could still get something done. I don't want to say they've taken him off the market. I don't think that's factual. But there was a report from Jordan Schultz, maybe some other people last week, that the Bengals think they're going to get a deal done with Trey Hendrickson. Mm-hmm. I just took all that complimenting as, I'm not so sure about that. This could still be the drumming up of a market because you're getting some offers for threes, but you want a two, and you're putting him over in a way that every time you get to talk about him, you know, you're only selling him more and more. We've talked about this with Washington for years.
Yep.
They couldn't do this with their own guys. They did the opposite. They would run them down. They would not build them up. It's just marketing, right? You are marketing a player. You're selling a player. And I heard some of that maybe when he was talking. I think it's all true. I think he means every word of it. But I still have a sneaking suspicion they're going to trade him for like a second round pick, if I had to guess.
Huh.
The keeping and paying him, while it would be an amazing accomplishment, it's hard for me to fathom they pay Chase, they pay Higgins, and they pay him after paying Burrow crazy money. I know the cap's getting bigger and bigger, but they would be the ultimate stars and scrubs operation. I don't know how you feel the quality roster around those guys.
I'm not sure how you do either. And that's kind of my... I think the thing that damned them in this regard was the Higgins contract. Right? Where Higgins is very good, but not Jamar Chase, and that's obvious that you could see it in the different payment structure. Joe Burrow is incredible. You have to keep Joe Burrow, for God's sakes. I've always thought they were going to keep Hendrickson, and I still think they are, but I'm kind of looking at the roster the same way you are, going, I don't know where the rest of this is going to come from. You put a lot of pressure on your GM to find a bunch of unbelievably low-cost and effective players to replenish a group that, frankly, was a disaster on that side of the ball, especially last year. So I still think they're keeping him against better judgment, to be honest with you. Like, to me, once you signed Higgins, you said, for me, okay, bye. We can't, because we've got two birds in a hand here. We're going to have to move on from Hendrickson. I don't think they're viewing it that way.
But that's why I would have picked Chase and the edge.
That's what I would have done, yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah. The two receivers and an edge, if they get it all done, awesome cap manipulation, great job. I just think that you're signing yourself up for no wiggle room to be able to pay anybody else in the next couple of years. Yep. And it's not somewhere I'd want to be. I just want more flexibility than that, to be able to manipulate the cap a little bit differently and better moving forward. Another AFC coach who spoke that I think Commanders fans will want to hear what he had to say. This was our J.P. Finley was asking the questions down there with NBC4 of D'Amico Ryans of the Texans. They were talking about left tackle Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, with trading Laremy, thought it was a move that was beneficial to everyone. At the same time, it was a move where, man, we were able to get some valuable draft picks out of it, and Washington was able to get a really good player as well. So I think it benefited both teams.
What is Washington getting in Tunsil?
Yeah, you're getting one of the top one-on-one pass protectors in the NFL. So I think it'll definitely benefit Jaden from having a guy who he knows can protect his blind side.
I think this will eventually be a trade that works out really, really well for both sides. When the Texans originally traded Tunsil, my reaction was, how on earth are you going to give up a quality left tackle when you've got a good young quarterback on a rookie deal, a lot like Washington does, you know, a year further advanced, theoretically, in C.J. Stroud. But when you start to ask the people around the Texans, you know, folks that covered them, we had a lot of those guests on, whether it was the penalties or, you know, the fact that they want to philosophically change what they are a little bit, be more of a road grading, physical, run-first team maybe, with Stroud as kind of a play-action passer. That isn't necessarily Tunsil's game. Doesn't mean he can't do it at a high level, but he is the ultimate pass protector. He is elite dropping back and protecting one-on-one, as you just heard his former coach say. The rest of it, he does really well. But I think the Texans are kind of just going in a different direction. They wanted to free up some of that money, and they know that they've got not only Heftin to pay Stroud, they've already paid Nico Collins. There's more where that's coming from, right? In terms of kids, they got a great defensive end they're going to have to pay in short order who gets to the quarterback. So they needed that cash that Washington had plenty of.
Yeah, I still was surprised, to be frank with you. You know what I mean? It's one of those, I'm so used to getting the bad end of a deal that my initial reaction was, okay, what happened? What don't I know about? What's coming down the pike? You know, enough Donovan McNabbs have happened over the years where Washington's going, look at this, and the other team's going, look at these guys. You know what I mean? I don't think that's the case here, though. I think this is one of those, I think you're right. I think your assessment's right on. They had some sort of organizational sea change or a different idea of what they wanted to do, and I think they did something foolish here. Now, those graphics will help them, but to me, you don't give up a left tackle that's really good. I know he may have relative weaknesses and may not be as good in one area over another. I would change what I wanted to do because I had him. I got Stroud. I got him. I got a good receiver. I don't care, frankly, about getting Joe Mixon in his age 30 year a couple more carries off the left side. I care about keeping my quarterback that's going to, I'm going to go as far as he takes me, upright.
Another part of it, too, I think a lot of times teams know where they're pivoting to before we do. They're not allowed to, but like the agent and the team have already spoken, or there's a feel for what could be coming down the pike. And they've already added Cam Robinson as their left tackle. Mm-hmm. He's 29. Robinson was the former second-round pick in the 2017 draft by the Jaguars who came into his own as a really good player. I'm not pretending like he's Laremy Tunsil, Danny. Laremy Tunsil's top five. Robinson is not. But he's a legitimate starter at left tackle. He is, I would say, like a better version of what Washington had in Charles Leno. You know, when they just, for a couple of years, didn't have to worry about it, if you remember. The Vikings, when they lost Christian Darrisaw last year, the Virginia Tech standout.
And our producer.
Who's become a very, very good left tackle. He goes down for the season, I think it was in that Rams game, and they had to go sign Cam Robinson. He came in for 10 games and played pretty well for Minnesota. I think they said, are we getting worse from Tunsil to Robinson? Yes. Is it a big enough step back to justify not adding these picks, not clearing up this space with where we're at right now? I don't have a huge problem with that logic. I think you're right generally. Just the exception to the rule might be this trade. But it's like Peter saying, I actually am a draft first guy. I just have to do it now. I think they'd like to never trade a great left tackle, but the stars aligned this time to make it work a little bit. We'll get you more NFL content as we go today, as the coaches have been talking, some news is being broken, including where Washington's going to be practicing this summer and where they're going to be playing a preseason game. We've got that for you on Grant and Danny. Our double play is next, and at the top of the hour in 20 minutes, right at 4 o'clock, we're giving away a two-pack of tickets, a pair to the Wolf Trap Pick Your Own Show series. You're listening to The Fan. It's time for our double play, driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
So we got a little bit of a problem here, Jeeps. Not you and I, but I'm facing something. So the Chiefs dropped the game this weekend. My 7-year-old's flag football team, 13-12, heartbreaker. Happens, whatever, it's youth sports, nobody really cares who wins or loses. Here's the deal. My guy Matt is our OC, and he should be the OC. He knows what he's doing.
Matt Canada, very good OC.
Yeah, well, this Matt is very, very good. Not just being kept around because he's buddies with the head coach or something. This guy knows what he is doing. The offense is better when Matt runs it. So Matt was there for 80% of the game. Then he and his son had to jet their obligations, right? So I had to run the offense for the last part of the game. Four plays, we did not gain a yard. A four and out, other team gets the ball, they get the first down, we lose, ball game. Everyone's kind of going, You know who the OC was when they couldn't get a yard? I mean, if we'd gotten close, if we'd had a little bit of progress, that's what they're doing a little bit.
Was that with a talk at the water cooler?
Well, people are frustrated.
Getting to the bottom of why the series went awry?
People are frustrated. And I understand the frustration. It's like we're trying to, because football's such an interesting thing with the other sports as your kids start to grow up and play these different things. Soccer's so free-flowing, and, you know, until basically age 9 or 10, it's just a little group of hornets sort of, like, you know, moving around with the ball, and no one knows anything, and you're just trying to get them to compete or whatever. Baseball is a lot of standing around and some fundamentals, but it's still free-flowing. Once the ball's hit, it doesn't, you know, you're not controlling anything. Football is interesting. It's more intense because it is a specific set of instructions every play. You go here, you go there, you do this, you do that. And then when they don't do it, everyone kind of looks, you know, first at the kid, then they look at you. Like, what did you tell them? Like, what happened? And we just couldn't do it. We're supposed to fake on a given play. Fake to Carter. Fake to Lincoln. Hand it to Connor. We did none of those three things. And then everyone's kind of standing around. Connor just took the ball, got tackled right away. Not tackled, but you mean the flagpole.
Seems like a complicated play that coach called.
Yeah, it's not like we didn't work on that stuff. We worked on all of it. There's a messaging issue. There's a formation issue. There's been a lot of texts going around among the coaching staff. You know, nobody's blaming anybody specifically, but there's a
How old are these kids?
7 and 8.
Okay.
But there's a subtext there. It's like, hey, let's try this. The thing we need to try is not have me call plays anymore. I think I'm on the verge of getting fired.
So what happened? He left. There's no one else that could have done it?
Well, you know, we're all trying to help out and pitch in. Luke's got the defense. Did his job. You know what I mean?
Seems that way.
13-12, Luke did just fine. The defensive team.
I think Matt's getting off the schneid a little easily here. He had 12 points when our guy was calling plays.
There was a goal line stop in there where, you know, just sometimes it doesn't work, but the possessions are moving. The ball is moving, matriculating up and down
the
field.
We're moving the football.
Yeah, there's some first downs. There's time of possession. Not the four and out where we don't gain a foot. Not a foot. We didn't have if we had a fruit by the foot, we would have fallen short of the fruit by the foot. You see what I'm saying? Bad. Oof. My possession was awful. I kind of trotted to the sideline, head in shame. And as an added bonus, I bought one of those like coaching whiteboards with like a field on it. Brand new as of Thursday, gets delivered to my house. The marker that came with it already didn't work by Sunday.
It's a bad sign.
It looked so unprepared and amateurish. My guy Jimmy showed up with some markers. He goes, I have some dry erase markers at home. Want me to bring them? I said, yes. Oh, just bad. It's bad. That's all. That's what I got. It's not going good for the Chiefs. There's turmoil.
You need Mahomes to save you.
It would help me so much.
Was at a birthday party for the niece yesterday. She turned 1. Happy birthday, Zozo. I bring up the birthday party, Danny, because food. So the eats were good, mm-hmm. I will say.
Mm-hmm.
Was trying to do my best, what with our co-pair efforts here, trying to cut down on some LBs where we can. They bring out ice cream cups.
Yep.
Little frozen ice cream cups. I was reminded of being 7 at a birthday party at a bowling alley or something, where you peel back the little paper top and you go right in for the ice cream. This was, I don't know if it's just because I was saying no to everything and I said yes to this or what. It was the best ice cream I've ever eaten. How familiar are you with the Blue Bell Ice Cream Company?
They know what they're doing over there.
They make a good ice cream.
The Blue Bell folks have the old Randy Duye seal of approval.
But I want to show you these cups and these sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
And these little, and it's the perfect amount. Now, I say it's the perfect amount.
I was going to say perfect amount, excuse me?
I would eat 4 of them, if we're being honest. But you feel like when you eat one, you're like, you know what? I didn't do anything that terrible. I didn't do anything that great either. But I didn't do anything that terrible.
It's not like you ate a salad with no dressing, but it's also you didn't, you know.
Now, I got chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And only chocolate, because you know that's how I roll.
Sure.
It was a kid's birthday party, so chocolate was available because kids eat like kings. But I feel like I need to start buying, and you probably have to do it in some weird way that's a little bit embarrassing, as if you're about to have a birthday party. I don't know if you would get this at like the party store or if this is just an Amazon purchase, but the ice cream that comes in little cups reminisce
the little shooters,
be nostalgic of my yesteryear. The other thing is you don't have to scoop it, right? What's more annoying than you're about to eat some ice cream, but first it's all frozen and I got to hurt my wrist trying to get ice cream out?
Either wait for a while. Like you can't. When it's ice cream time, it's not wait time.
Does anybody do that where they have little cups of ice cream in their freezer available rather than having to go into a tub and scoop it out?
It's usually a spacing issue, right? So, like, if you're going to get, say, like a 6-pack or a 12-pack of those cups, it takes up more space than just the one tub of ice cream.
Not by much, probably, though. You're probably right, but you could just throw them in there loose, you know, into the freezer and have them sitting on bags of peas or whatever. You don't have to overly organize.
No, you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, to me, it's one of those things where I know let's say, sake of argument, I go to a 7-Eleven or somewhere and I grab myself 3 Bluebells. Like, oh, I've got 3 of them. They're going to get eaten. I'm going to have to go back to the 7-Eleven
to
get more.
So you get this sometimes?
Yeah.
And what do you get? You're getting a pint when you do that?
I don't know how to describe it. It's not the full pint, like the Ben and Jerry size.
Because you would not be able to get this at a gas station. These are birthday party packages where they come 12 or 14 of them in a sleeve. And they're very small little, it's for little kids at a birthday party to just have a few scoops of ice cream. I think that's what I need in my life, maybe.
Just I always call them the little shooters, whatever those are. You're like the it's not a shot glass, but it's not the full-sized situation. They're meant to be individually served.
I think I might have to do the individually packaged ice cream. Some restaurants, you know, our buddy who runs a great restaurant in New Orleans, Christian, runs Brennan's, they started getting their ice cream pre-scooped, which you have to pay a lot more for. But the way they justify it is it saves on man hours. It takes, you know, they're doing Bananas Foster by the hundreds every single night.
Yep.
So instead of scooping out the ice cream and breaking it, you know, taking the thing out and having to, you know, let it not be frozen or somebody's wrist getting hurt because they're doing all the ice cream, they just have pre-scooped ice cream. They just drop right in. I had a delicious helping of that pre-scooped ice cream. Never would have known they didn't scoop it right there.
I was like, I actually asked him, is this pre-scooped? Because I could tell. My sophisticated palate could tell the difference.
Grant and Danny on the Fan at the top here at 4 o'clock. We're going to give away that pair of tickets to a show of your choice. You're going to get tickets to choose what you want to see at Wolf Trap. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.